You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
The following is a paid program. Warning. The views expressed come from men who've spent half their lives in grease-stained overalls, inhaling hazardous fluids. Before taking any advice, consider the source. This program will contain humor of a questionable nature.
A mechanic tries to fix your car. No matter if you're near or far, he'll change your oil or fix your flat, and he'll do it just like that.
Buckle up, everyone. It's time to get this show on the road. Time for Dave's Corner Garage, your Saturday morning joyride on Zoomer Radio. Got a car question for Dave or Alan? Call now, 416-360-0740. Or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
Okay, Alan, do it. Hello and welcome to Dave's Corner Garage. Another week. Man, the week has just flown this week. It's just zapped when we were just here last week.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Just say it to me. joining us today is Terry O'Keefe from Omvik and Carrie Schmidt from the OPP.
So you're going to struggle with that all
day. You're going to struggle with that all morning.
I know.
Gary and Terry.
Gary and Carrie and everybody else is doing. By the way, this morning we welcome your calls. If you've got problems with your car or you got problems buying a car, we're going to hear some interesting information from financing and what's happening when you're trying to finance a car. And one of the hints would be if they're shopping your financing around, your credit rating is going to be dropping. So that's one of the topics we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about financing that are not done properly. I would say the word is they're illegal forms that these guys are filling out. So that's one of the topics we'll be going to. And Carrie is all upset about motorcycle mobs.
Exactly. So if your name is Larry or Sherry, you're welcome to give us a call because we got Terry and Carrie on the show today. This is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be back with more excitement.
Yes, financing when we come back. And he tells me that. Hey, we're welcome back.
It's a different microphone.
The audience has been told us that we have to change the way we do our mics. And speaking of which, we have Terry O'Keefe with us from Omvik. Terry, are we the only industry with all this industry stuff going on? There's other industries that have the same issues, I'm sure.
Oh, there's other industries with even bigger problems.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said it that way, though, because many people don't know that retail vehicle sales in the province of Ontario is actually a highly regulated industry.
Mm-hmm.
Every dealer, every salesperson has to be licensed. There's mandatory education for them so that they learn all the regulations. And, of course, every dealership gets inspected. There's all kinds of different things going on in this industry. And that's why, we talk about the bad things that are going on in the industry, and there are still things happening that shouldn't be. But this is not the Wild West that it once was.
Right. The Wild West is actually, if you want to know, in Halifax. There's no safety checks. There's no emission tests. It's as is where. It's just like it was 35 years ago.
And that's another really good point. Yeah. Different provinces across this country have different rules and regulations. Ontario's vehicle sales here happen to be highly regulated. Other provinces have far less regulation.
Yeah. And then one of the issues is ethics. I mean, we're always talking about ethics of the sales and actually ethics from the buyers too, because they're involved in that too. So we were going to talk this morning about financing, and you've been getting stuff where they've been filling out forms that aren't actually accurate.
Yeah, we've actually had to unfortunately charge a few dealers in the last, I'd say 18 months or so. I'm going to turn over my page here because I want to make sure I get names right. Ryan Maxwell. He was a salesperson at an Oshawa dealership, and I'm naming him because he's been charged and convicted with falsifying employment information on a credit application for a vulnerable consumer.
So for maybe if somebody doesn't understand what that is, because we were talking earlier in the green room, and I wondered how that was really bad. But explain that. So let's say I haven't been working too long and aren't making a whole lot of money, but I want a new car, and the car dealer tries to help me out.
Well, they may think they're trying to help you out.
Right.
But if a dealer has to falsify information, falsify that you make more than you actually do or that your debts are a lot less than they actually are.
Right.
I mean, that's illegal.
So he's trying to make me look that much more attractive
to the finance company.
To the lending company.
That's right, to the finance company.
So wouldn't the finance company do due diligence and find out it's not correct?
The last two vehicles that I purchased, and I financed, mm-hmm. I wasn't asked for even proof of employment.
No.
It's they rely very heavily on the fact that the loan is being secured by the vehicle itself.
Okay, fine.
Oh, so you mean so you don't even have to sign this affidavit that says, as far as I know, all this information is correct? And
oftentimes the application to the finance company is filled out electronically.
Oh, wow.
The consumer might not even see it, which is why we actually issued a news release a couple of weeks ago suggesting to consumers that if you are financing a vehicle, and don't get me wrong, dealers often can get you very good financing, maybe even better than your own bank will, because they deal with a lot of different lenders.
Right.
But a couple of the things that you want to do is ask them to print out a copy of that application so you can verify the information that you provided mm-hmm. is indeed accurate. And one of the other things that you should know, or certainly ask the dealer, is who are you sending my application to?
And how many are you sending my application to?
Exactly, because they may be submitting your application to multiple lenders. They might send it to RBC, TD Bank, Scotia. They also are going to have non-bank lenders. You want to know, because each time you apply for credit, of course, it affects your credit score. And you also should know that dealers receive a payment from the financing companies.
Right. Commission.
Exactly. They get a payment for arranging the financing. So you want to make sure that if they've applied to multiple lenders, well, what was the offer from each of those multiple lenders? Because you want to make sure you're getting the best terms and rate for you, not necessarily the terms and rate from the financial institution that's going to give the biggest payment or commission to the dealer.
Now, one of the things that I know that happens in the U.S., they advertise brand new cars, $69 a month, not mm-hmm. a week, a month. And they do what's called a bump. You'll run it for 6 months, and all of a sudden your payment bumps up to $400 a month. And a lot of these people don't realize that there is a bump in the contract. And when the S hits the fan, that's when you have an issue.
I haven't seen personally many examples of that here in Ontario. I don't think it's a business model that happens here.
Yeah.
I can't think off the top of my head that it would necessarily be illegal as long as all the appropriate disclosures were made and consumers actually did understand exactly what they were signing and getting themselves into. But again, Dave, you raise a really good point. Car loans themselves, the finance agreements today can be negotiated for one thing,
yes.
mm-hmm. But they can be very complicated. You want to make sure that you fully understand it. Know your own creditworthiness before you go to the dealership. Find out what your own bank might be able to give you the car loan so that you can compare what the dealer is offering. Mm-hmm. So many people, they do the research on the car purchase, but if they're financing it, they don't do any research on the finance products, and they really, really should. And of course, the other thing to be really concerned about is the length of term of the loan. We are seeing very commonly today those vehicle purchase loans that are 7, 8, even 9 years.
Yeah, that's outrageous. I mean, how many cars are going to be around in 9 years? They'd probably be sick of it by then.
But, right? I've run into that myself without realizing that people actually do finance that long, where I've looked at a car and said it needs a huge repair.
Yeah.
And the guy says, I still have to make a payment. I said, you haven't finished paying for this car yet?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So he's got to do a $1,000 repair and still write a check for $450 at the end of the month.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then you know what? They do it weekly now. Instead of they had to do it bi-weekly. Now they're weekly. So
well,
like,
you know what? It's a great point.
$65 a week.
Great point. You know, we'll get to that afterwards because we have what they call monthly junkies.
Monthly payment junkies.
All right, we're going to get into that, a little bit more on that, after this break. This
right.
is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll
yes,
be so right
if back. You want to call in, the number is during the break, and you can join the conversation. All righty, welcome back. It's Dave's Corner Garage. My name's Dave Redinger, Alan Gelman.
Yeah, and sitting beside me is Terry O'Keefe.
You got it.
From OMVIC.
And behind the board today is Sebastian, so things are looking up.
There we go. And the studio audience has left the building.
Now, I learned a new word just now, payment junkies.
Yeah, monthly payment junkies. So this is a term that's often used to apply to people that I can buy that car for that much.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's immediate gratification. And it's happened. People can buy cars that 20 years ago would have been unaffordable to
mm-hmm.
them
right.
because of these extended term loans, these 6, 7, 8, even 9 year vehicle loans.
Is it smart for the manufacturer to take a guy out of the trade for that long?
Well, in the short term, But you're right. There's a question of sustainability because what happens is these consumers often develop what we refer to as negative equity. I know that's an oxymoron if ever there was one.
Yeah, I know that one.
But that's what happens. So let's say that I'm the consumer and I buy a vehicle for 8 years. I bought a $30,000 car. I financed it over 8 years. I commute. I'm coming in from the north. So I'm putting higher than average miles on my car. So after 4 years, I've put 140,000 kilometers on my car.
At which point the car requires?
It requires repairs.
Brakes and tires.
Exactly.
And thousands of dollars.
It's out of warranty. It's all these looming repairs. So I'm going to trade it in on a new car.
Oh, well, rather than fixing it.
Rather than fixing it. Okay. So I've got my 4-year-old car now.
Yep.
Wholesale value on it's only $7,000. It began depreciating the second it drove off the lot.
Right.
Plus, it's got high miles.
And so how much? And so.
But I still owe $16,100 on it.
That's
so you're as commonly referred to as in the ditch.
Yeah, I'm upside down, right? So I've got $9,000 of negative equity. So I'm going to buy a new car. Let's say my new car is $35,000.
Yeah.
But I still owe $9,000 on my trade-in. You've given me $7,000, but I owed $16,000.
So you're at $44,000.
So now I have to take out a loan for $44,000. And guess, so now my payments have gone way up. The cost of borrowing has gone way up because I borrowed more money, so I'm paying more interest. So that's okay. I can afford it. But what's going to happen in 4 years' time? Because I financed that car over 8 years.
Right. I didn't move closer to the city. I'm still going to be doing that crazy amount of mileage. I'm still going to end up with a worn-out car in the same 3 or 4 years.
And here's the other problem. Heaven forbid, but you have an accident with that car and they write it off.
Oh, you are so right, or it gets stolen.
Yeah.
The insurance company is going to pay you the value of the car, not the amount of the loan that's outstanding.
So your car's worth $16,000, buddy, because...
Right, so they could be giving you a check for $10,000 and you owe $30,000 more.
Yeah.
You have to Google that river. What's it called? The creek?
Yeah.
Some kind of creek.
And you might think, oh, this is far-fetched. When we talk to dealers, they tell us that between 50 and 70% of consumers who have trade-ins have negative equity.
Wow. That's
and
a huge amount.
And this is going to snowball. So eventually, you're right, this is about sustainability, Dave.
Yeah.
You might be able to roll the negative equity in once, maybe twice, but there will come a time when you simply won't be able to borrow, $60,000 for a $30,000 car because either a finance company is going to say no or it's simply unaffordable.
Is that why when Statistics Canada says, Canadians owe $1.87 for every dollar they earn or something, is this cars are that big part of that market?
Oh, potentially part of it. I mean, we certainly hear economists talking about a looming bubble similar to the mortgage crisis,
on
a smaller scale, albeit, with car loans. And this is one of the reasons why.
That's exactly what I was going to go to, because subprime, which is these guys that owe so much money that they're really not creditworthy, they would still get involved in these buy-here, sell-here schemes, and they end up in the ditch with no car and no money.
So, and we do see it. We see consumers who are credit challenged or in that subprime market, as it's referred to. They're desperate. They have to have a car to get to work. And all they can get is a loan at 29, 39, whatever it might be. And it is absolutely problematic. Sometimes these consumers, they'll get into a vehicle and there's no possible way they're going to be able to meet those payments.
Many times we're more benign here in Ontario than they are down south. I've read articles where the same car has been resold 7 times in 2 years because they buy it, they can't afford it, they repo it, they resell it to the next sucker.
Well, you need a car and you walk into the dealership and here's a buddy in his nice double-knit suit and he's going, hey, we can put you into this lovely car here.
Yeah.
And you're going, well, I could never afford a car like that. And they said, well, bet you can. And you know how they do it. They fool around with the numbers and they make out an app and next thing you know, you're in the car. And I've seen it myself being in the repair side of it where all of a sudden buddy who could hardly afford a Corolla ends up buying a BMW. Well, it was the same money.
Yep.
And then the exhaust falls off and it's $1,000 to fix the exhaust. They go, whoa, they never told me that was going to happen. So this is how people get in trouble.
Yeah, serious trouble.
And that's these extended term loans that allow that customer to buy that BMW for the same as the price of the Corolla without understanding the ramifications.
Now,
so I'm not saying no one should borrow over 8 years. I'm just saying do it with eyes wide open. Make sure you understand what could happen.
Now I know why they call it ramifications, because you got rammed when you bought it, eh? Is that
we're
where
gonna
it comes
be talking
from?
About the Lyft Uber and what effects they have on the car business when we come back. Alrighty, it's Dave's Corner Garage. I got Alan sitting beside me because
the garage doors are
opening.
I can't see that good, and it's important to read. We were talking just before the break with Terry about reading the contract, reading what you're signing.
Okay, so we have a caller actually who wants to talk about his Kia.
All right, Mark in Hamilton. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Hey. How are you doing?
I'm fine. My wife's 2015 Kia Optima, 18,000 clicks on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 2.5 years old. I'm sitting in it right now. The dealer here in Hamilton's asking me, he's asked me twice now to do this service, a full system, fuel system service for $189,
mm-hmm.
and a throttle body service for $129.
Wow.
And I question the need for this. Like, this car runs fine.
Well, here's the deal. They want you to maintain that car in a like-new kind of condition. Whether you want to spend that money and care to keep it like-new is another story. Certainly a throttle body service is something that we see in the industry as a vehicle needing. I don't know if that price is a good one. I would check with an aftermarket repair shop because it can be done for a lot less. In terms of the fuel system cleaning, do you use the proper gas in the car? Because a lot of times people will cheat and they'll use regular gas when a car calls for super. What do you use in yours?
This car runs on regular.
Yeah, and if it's running fine, by all means, it's not something I think you really have to jump on. Dave?
We have a saying around here called RTFM. So that means read the F in manual.
And I haven't done that, no.
I always take it to the washroom because that's the only place I read. But anyways, the bottom line is check in there
TMI.
for what what information is necessary, what service information is necessary under extreme use.
Yeah, right? What we're concerned about here is you don't want to mess up your warranty. So if the manufacturer is calling for you to do a service, which may be way less than what the dealer is actually trying to sell you, this is where you can get clarification.
Yeah, just go there and it'll say.
Look in the book.
Does it say throttle body service? Hey, it doesn't say it, or it does say it, right? And the second thing you should know, the guy who is the service advisor, I call him advisor, Alan calls him salesman.
He's a service salesman, really. I mean.
All right, he's trying to sell as much product as possible. So you have to keep that in the back of your mind. Do I really need it? Back up your own information. Find out if you do need it and make your decision.
I would call it expensive chicken soup at this point, will it hurt? No. Will it help? Who knows? It's going to help the guy who you're giving the money to, that's for sure.
So why would we consider this extreme driving?
Because
of low miles on it?
No. It's because our Canadian weather is so crazy.
Climate. It's a whole climate thing.
It's all about climate. It means there's more salt.
It does worry me a little. It worries me a little that this car, my wife works from home now.
Mm-hmm.
This car, I drive it on the weekends. It's the only time it moves at all.
Yeah.
Well, that in itself is not great either, because we get people in who say, well, my sticker says I'm supposed to be coming in for an oil change, but I've only put on 1,000 kilometers and I still have 4 or 5 to go. But in fact, the little short drives that this car finally actually gets is harder on it than if you drove it to work all the way, because it doesn't warm up properly. You get a lot of condensation in there.
Yeah.
And that's where, for sure, on oil changes, you should still be doing them at least a couple times a year.
And remember, we have seasons, right? In the winter, there's salt and brine and everything on the road that gets into the braking systems. The brakes have to be serviced going into the winter. I like to service them going in, service coming out of the winter. Gas line antifreeze. There's different things, summer and winter, and that's how we call it the extreme service.
All right, Mark?
Yeah, sir. The thing goes in like 4 times a year for oil changes. It breaks my heart to do it, but we do it.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's a smart move because it's still a big investment and oil changes cheap.
All right, thanks for calling in.
Thanks very much, Mike.
You're very welcome. You know, Mark was talking about, and back to what you were wanting to talk about earlier, now his wife doesn't even go to a job. She's able to work from home. And people aren't using cars as much as they do.
We were talking, there's an article about how much effect Uber and Lyft and all those sharing cars, car sharing services are affecting the consumer. And they had an Uber service in this one town in Arizona. They took it away, and 41% of those people went back and bought cars. So the consumers are actually reacting very quickly to the fact that if Uber's available or not available.
Well, if public transit's not readily available in their town, and they got to get to work, you either, like you say, you either call Uber and you get a $10 cab ride, or if not, you're going to have either strong legs and back, the ride bicycle,
which leads me
or
to
take cab.
If a taxi cab or a police car shows up on a car lot, they actually have to tell you that, don't they?
Oh, that is a mandatory disclosure. Yeah. And if it's not made, it actually triggers a customer's right to cancel the contract.
Oh, I thought of this the other day, as a matter of fact. But let's say I'm an Uber driver. Is that considered a taxi cab?
Oh, I wish you had not asked me that question.
Oh, okay.
This is one of those issues that we are actually looking at right now at OMVIC. Is an Uber vehicle considered a taxi?
Yeah,
right.
And it's one that we are investigating, and we'll have to try and get a legal opinion to determine whether it is or not. Because of course, disclosure as a taxi cab is a required.
Well, not just taxi cabs,
requirement.
But rental cars. Daily rental cars, so, they come off after 6 months or eight months.
But the insurance has changed on Uber as well, because it came out about 3-4 months ago where Uber, if you're insured, like Al, if you're a driver for Uber without the accident, and you have your own insurance, you are bridge financed so that if somebody is driving in your car, they're still covered and you're still covered. But it's changing because Uber's CEO is in hot water again, even though his tush is out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nobody really knows right now.
But at the end of the day, in terms of me trading a car in, I mean, let's say I was driving for Uber and maybe I just worked 3, 4, 5 hours a week. Aren't we just looking at the total mileage on the vehicle? Like it's because it's my car, I'm driving it nicely, I would think. So how does that negatively affect the car in terms of the trade, or why OMVIC would be involved in this?
Well, if it's a taxi, it is a required disclosure.
Yes, it is.
And as I said, it's actually one of those is if it's not made, it triggers rescission. Mm. So I think it's a fair question and one that needs to be evaluated. Is there a difference in the way a taxi is driven and those vehicles are treated? In an Uber vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And that is certainly something that we are looking at OMVIC right now.
So if the right rear door is falling off, you could have been a taxi. All right. We have some questions. The phone lines are busy, so we could have come back and we talk about some warranty issues. And Alan, take us out.
I do. I remember years ago when they did one of those mystery cars, you know, they showed the 4 screw holes on the dashboard where the microphone clip was. And they went, what are you talking about? Anyways, this is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be right back.
It's Dave's Corner Garage. I'm Dave Redinger. Alan Gelman is here as usual.
Right here.
Terry O'Keefe from OMVIC, the Ontario Motor Vehicle Industry Council, and we have a phone call about warranty issues. But before we just go to that, we're talking about daily rentals entering the retail market. And you were saying that daily rentals could have an accident and not show up on a site for like CarProof or whatever, Carfax.
That's right. It's one of those dealers have to disclose if a vehicle has been involved in an accident that resulted in more than $3,000 in damage.
Right.
If a vehicle was a previous daily rental, most rental companies are self-insured. So if it was involved in an accident, that information will not show up on a vehicle history report like CarProof.
Mm-hmm.
So if the car that you're looking at is a previous daily rental and the dealer simply says it's got a clean CarProof, that doesn't mean that the car hasn't been involved in an accident. You should make sure that the dealer has done a thorough inspection of that car.
That's right. It only means the report was clean.
That's exactly right.
It doesn't necessarily mean the car was clean.
Yeah.
I saw that in Florida. There was this one place. I think it's called Off Lease. And every car in the lot's been hit. But they write, buy the car, not the CarProof.
Well, no, I mean, listen, I was involved in the same thing myself where I was involved in an fender bender. And I didn't want it to infect my insurance. So I coughed up $1,500 to the body shop to fix this lady's car that I hit.
Yeah.
Nobody would be the wiser. I mean, and for that kind of money, it's not like there's any structural problem anyways, really.
It's a broken light or something. Okay, let's go to the phones. We have Doug on the phone, and he's got a question about warranty. Doug, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah. Yes, I've got a Ford Escape. It's less than 4 years old. It's got a transmission problem and told that they can't do anything about it.
What's the mileage on the car?
21,000 Ks.
Oh, that's like nothing.
It's still under the powertrain warranty.
What kind of problems does it have? What is it doing?
It's when I'm slowing down, drop-down gears is not engaging properly, and
it's not kicking down.
Slowing the car exceptionally fast. And then that clears off when it hits the next drop-down point.
But question, you said you had a powertrain warranty.
Yes.
The transmission is usually the major part of that powertrain.
That's right.
How come they're not? They won't help you out?
They say they can't fix it. Can't do anything about it.
Because there's no repair, or just that they won't do it for free?
No, they just say they can't. There's nothing they can do about it.
Hmm. East Court Ford. He was with us for many, many years.
Call Mark.
Yeah, Mark at East Court Ford. Look up the number. I don't remember it anymore. But he is one of those, like a bulldog. He'll go after the issue until it's resolved. I mean, he's one of the greatest guys I've ever met in the service industry.
Mm.
All right? So it's East Court Ford, and they're on Kennedy Road, just north of the 401.
Yeah. Okay, now suppose they come back with the same answer. Is there some government agency I can go to?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, there's something called CAMVAP, the Canadian Motor Vehicle Arbitration Plan.
Yeah.
And CAMVAP settles disputes between consumers and manufacturers. It's not, this isn't about the dealership, obviously. This is about the manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can contact CAMVAP. I would suggest to you, though, don't leave it too long, because you can only apply for CAMVAP arbitration if the vehicle is of the current model year or the previous four model years and has less than 160,000 kilometers. Now, you're obviously well under that 160K, but you're coming up to that five-year limit. So I would suggest you just go online, look up CAMVAP, C-A-M-V-A-P, and if you're not getting any satisfaction from the manufacturer, that's something you might want to look into.
And you should be aware, if you go to CAMVAP, whatever this decision is of the arbitration board, you have to abide. So if they tell you to get lost, that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
If they say no, the manufacturer has to put another unit in, they have to apply by. They have to agree to that, too.
You know, I'm wondering, though, you know, when Doug said the dealer said they can't help him, I mean, I'm wondering if there really is a fix, which is another possibility.
Could happen, yeah.
So I'd probably get a second opinion, either go to another Ford dealer, maybe go see Mark, as Dave said, or go to a tranny shop and have them take it for a ride and say,
yeah,
is this normal for this kind of car?
Well, it was to Mr. Transmission.
Yeah.
It was normal?
And he's the one that's saying, giving that...
That there could be a fix. Okay, well, then that's the way you go. I would go see another Ford dealer.
Hey, Doug, we'll take a car and trade. No problem at all. Just bring it right down. We'll get to make ones of small ones and Chevys.
All right, Doug, thanks for calling. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. After the break, we've got Duncan and Perry Sound. He's got a question for us.
We have Kerry Schmidt, too.
Well, okay. I messed up the order.
All right. We have Kerry Schmidt.
We are going to talk to this guy eventually, you know.
All right, we will.
This is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be right back.
Okay, I wish you were with us during the break. All right,
ladies and gentlemen, we have Kerry Schmidt from the OPP on the phone. Last weekend, there was a motorcycle free-for-all on the highways around town. If you were there, maybe you can help. Kerry, what's it all about?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, we got complaints left, right, and center. We had like up to 150 to 200 motorcycles just tearing up the highways, just hijacking the roads, coming to a full stop, swarming people that are trying to get around the city. And it was just incredible, just complete disregard for public safety. And we had officers, we had our aircraft in the sky watching overhead, and it was just mayhem and chaos.
Sounds like an Evel Knievel wannabe convention.
Well, yeah, they thought that they were going to go out and have some fun. This was actually billed as some sort of charity event, although I didn't see any charity in this.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see 200 motorcycles swarming cars, doing wheelies, stopping on the highway, doing brake stands and smoke shows, and just having a complete abandonment of any common decency and courtesy for everybody else who's trying to use the highways. I talked to many people who actually got stuck behind these guys when they shut down the road, and this is unbelievably frustrating. And just it crosses the line.
You know, I was coming home from Cayuga, and on the 401, and there was like 30 bikes passing us in between the lanes, back and forth. If I hit that guy, what happens? I mean, obviously I'm going to hurt him. But
well, you know what? As a rider, they know they're vulnerable. They're going to get hurt if they go down. And doing these stunts, like, sure, I'm sure they're talented in their activities, but do it in a controlled space, someplace safe, someplace where it's not breaking the law, and you can go have a fun time. It, you know, we don't have any issues with people going out for rides and enjoying the outdoors and going for a cruise. But when you start hijacking the highways, that's where we take issue. And I know there were many events across the province. Many of them were great events, charity events, and group rides and cruises, and that's fantastic. But when these hoodlums and hooligans go out and just take advantage and really have no respect for their fellow motorists on the road. Yeah, that's the concern that we have. And fortunately, there was no serious injuries. But I can tell you, you know, we actually had an officer trying to get into the group there and stop some of these motorists, the motorcyclists. And the officers got swarmed. The bikes all took off. And just a couple of minutes down the road, one of the bikes actually went down. And so as dangerous as it was already, it would have been even more dangerous had we tried to stop them with a couple of police cars on the road.
Well, now, in fact, even with the helicopter, you've yet to been able to figure out or find out who these people are, correct?
Well, we're working on it. I'll tell you, we've got a team of officers right now. We're committed to finding out who these people are, and we've got tons of tips coming in. Anyone who wants to call in is asked to call our tip line or Crime Stoppers. And the information is all on our Twitter pages and Facebook pages and so on. You can find all that information. And we've had lots of tips already from within and outside the groups. And people should realize if they're part of that group and they don't realize what they're getting themselves into, this is a good time to talk to police and let them know that they want to disassociate themselves with these gangsters, really, because
yes,
it is just it's unbelievable what liberties they think they can take and get away with.
You know, and I used to ride many, many, many years. We used to go like the Indianapolis Raceway or Washington, even drove once to Florida. But we're wearing leathers. We got helmets on. We got the boots on. I've seen these like with the girls in the back are wearing shorts and a T-shirt. She goes down. That girl is for the rest of her life disfigured.
That's it. Yeah, it may look cool and you may think you're getting a good time, getting some fresh air, but you have to have the protective equipment, but realize as well, if you go down, it doesn't matter if you have the full leathers and full helmet, you're the one who's going to take the brunt of it, and your body can't just take those kinds of shocks to the system.
No.
And sadly, you know, we've had upwards of almost, I think, 20 fatalities already this year involving motorcyclists, and about half of them, the motorcyclist was actually not at fault at the time. So it really amplifies the fact that they have to share the road and drive defensively and be prepared for what's coming up. Because on a public highway, you've got trucks, you've got cars, you have motorists of all skill levels, and you don't know what's coming up in front of you. And traffic conditions are tough enough in the best of conditions, never mind when people are out there hijacking the highways for their own thrills and pleasure.
Now, splitting lanes is not legal in Ontario, correct?
It is not legal, no. I know there's a lot of people that wish it was, but it is not. You have the lane, you share the road with other motorists, and you cannot split between vehicles.
Doggy, especially when you open the door on them.
Well, especially like Carrie was saying, you know, you get, you know, some older person or someone who has a lot of experience behind the wheel.
Yeah, they get scared.
And all of a sudden, you know, you're only talking inches on either side of that motorcycle get whacked.
If you're changing lanes, you check your mirrors, you don't see anybody, and all of a sudden a motorcycle decides to come in between, even if you just kind of drift to the one edge of your lane, you're going to clip that bike, and he's going down, and you will run over him, and that rider will die.
Yeah,
it's almost a guarantee. So that is the issues that's why the rules are in place. We need to share the road. If you want to go and push your bike or push your car and smoke your tires and do that stuff, you got to do that off the highway, you know, on a sanctioned event, wherever, on a track or on private property, wherever you're going. But the highways where we patrol, that's where we take exception to those kinds of behaviors.
There's racetracks like Toronto Motorsports Park. You can take your bike there. You can you can do laps. You can go crazy with other bikers and see how good you really are.
Exactly. If you think that good, go prove yourself there. These guys are out there beating their chest on the side of the highway. They just want to get their 5 minutes of internet fame and awesome, be on their way.
So. But on the good side, if you're waiting for an organ transplant,
I know. That's what they call them, organ donors.
Come on, don't be so negative. We got to get some positive out of this.
My doctor calls them organ donors. That's what he calls them.
Carrie Schmidt, thanks for protecting us.
Hey, awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Okay.
Right, bye-bye.
Remember, Carrie's available to any 400 series highway. Just wave at him as you pass.
There you go. And if you got a car care question, give us a call right now. This is Dave's Corner Garage.
All right, we have to be quick because this is our last segment. Just a couple of things that you should be aware of. Takata Airbags, which has been in the news now for 4 years, right? Just a quick question. Do they have to replace the bags before they sell the cars, or is it...
No. If the vehicle has an outstanding safety recall, we just ask that dealers disclose the fact that there's an outstanding recall to the purchaser so that the purchaser is aware. They can take steps to get it fixed themselves. And if you are buying a used car, please make sure that you notify the manufacturer of that car that you're now the owner so that any future recalls are going to come to you.
Well, under a proposed settlement Tuesday, Nissan had to pay another $97.7 million to owners for effective airbag recalls for their expenses for getting it done. So they joined Toyota, Mazda, BMW, and Subaru, who have all reached similar settlements. So if you've got a Mazda, I had my bags replaced.
I had mine and my Honda done as well. In fact, both of my Hondas had them done.
I had to go get a sandwich. I'm going to see if I can put a...
But, you know, on the other side of the coin, though, Ford is now fighting with Takata over this.
Is that right? Takata declared bankruptcy, and a Chinese company has bought it. 16 deaths and 180 injuries worldwide. It is worth considering how many millions and millions of cars are out there. It isn't that bad. But, you know, once the lawyers get involved, everybody gets involved, it's all...
Well, this is the largest recall in automotive history.
Tesla is announcing an electric semi.
Mm-hmm.
They want to use EV power to run a semi-truck. They're trying them in Nevada. It's also going to be autonomous.
So there won't be a driver per se. It'll all be done with electronically.
Well, currently there's supposed to be a driver in an EV anyways, to make sure it says. But the idea here is they're going to send these trucks down the road with nobody in them at all. And then at the end when they get to the city, a driver steps in.
Terrific. So you're on the 410, because it's always late with trucks on that highway. You're coming southbound the 410 from, say, whatever, Bolton. And they're all going to be self-driving trucks.
Yep.
That'll be really safe.
So you can put your finger up and tell you they're number one.
Yeah, lovely.
Well, you understand on the top level, top tier of autonomous cars, there will not be controls in them anyways.
Is that right? It's like
absolutely. There won't be a brake a brake pedal or a steering wheel.
You just talk to Siri. That'll be a lot of fun. Siri, you took me the wrong way.
Siri, brakes, Siri, stop.
Truck coming in. Look
at how many mistakes Siri makes. Just imagine that with technology in your car.
Please speak slow and clearly.
All right. Now, Rolls-Royce.
11.
Rolls-Royce has now offering a SUV, which they call it a higher riding vehicle. They don't call it an SUV. And they're a big competition from Bentley. So they just call Bentley a rebodied Audi. So even at those stratospheric levels of cars, there's competition.
Well, you know what? If we've been looking at stats for car sales, in fact, they've been going down. But the manufacturer's been holding their own because they've come up with alternative vehicles.
Yes.
So that's what people are buying. They're buying CUVs. They're buying off-road vehicles. And that's why, well, Dave, last week we talked about Ferrari's coming out with one.
Ferrari's coming out with one, and because there's a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
Ferrari actually built less than 8,000 cars, so they don't have to meet as stringent emissions systems as a manufacturer who manufactures more. But this will take over 10,000 cars, and they're going to have to change their emission standards.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. So the business is so changing every day. Cadillac announced they're not going to make any cars anymore. They're going to only make one model in next year and bring SUVs instead because that's what people want. So instead of having ATC and CTS and all that stuff, there'll be one Cadillac and the rest will all be SUVs.
I hope they give it a name rather than letters because it gets so confusing.
I remember my dad used to drive El Dorado. I mean, that's a car. I mean, it had gold-plated hubcaps, and it had fins, and it had 8 miles to the gallon, but who cared? You know, those are the days.
What did they call the vinyl top with the little window in it? There was a name for that, too.
I forgot now.
A special name.
Hearse.
The Brome.
No, that's the vehicle they use after the motorcycle riders keep going crazy, see?
It's insane. It's insane what's going on. The business is changing so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And how do they deal with value? Like, today, SUVs are current, but in 5 years, maybe nobody even wants them. So all of a sudden, the consumer's stuck with something nobody wants.
And if you're buying a car, that's a really good question to ask yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about these long-term loans and things like that. One of those questions isn't just how long am I planning on keeping this car, but how fast will this vehicle depreciate?
Yes.
Because, you know, if you're buying a vehicle and you're going to finance it over 8 years, if it's something that you think is going to depreciate really quickly, That's even an even greater risk that you're taking. But if it is something that you think is going to be really popular 4, 5, 6 years down the road, then, you know, it's perhaps a little safer to consider doing it that way.
Well, it happened to people years ago in California who had Hummers. All of a sudden, you know, they were getting the finger from green people because they were driving a vehicle that was sucking so much gas back. Besides the price of gas, you could hardly afford to drive it either. So at the end of the day, the value of that vehicle was almost nothing because nobody wanted one.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, today, SUVs, pickup trucks, that type of vehicle is very popular. And they do tend, depending on the model, of course, but they do tend to depreciate perhaps less than your regular sedan. But who knows, 5, 6 years from now, that could change.
I bought a 2014 Cadillac SUV last year, and I bought it for half of its retail value. And I'm going, who loses $30,000 over 18 months? It's insane. It's just crazy. But that was the value of the car. And that was still being inflated by the American market because I bought it at auction. So I was fighting an American who had a 30% advantage of buying the car. So I had to spend more money on the car than I would have. Otherwise, I would have paid less money here. And somebody lost over $30,000.
It's just one more thing you have to research before you make that decision to buy.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely true.
Thanks again for coming down, Terry. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, guys.
OMVIC.ca, OMVIC.ca.
OMVIC.ca.
Right. Don't forget, so even in terms of financing, OMVIC can help you out, and they got great information there for you.
Lots of information before you buy on our website.
Except if you don't buy from a used car dealer, you get nothing. You got to buy from a registered used car dealer.
That's the only time you're protected.
Well, the good news is you can go on the website and still pick up those pointers, though, eh?
Absolutely. There's pointers there for people who do want to take the risk and buy privately. We've got it for everybody.
Yep. There you go. On next week's show, we're going to be having Jim Matthews of Lease Busters. We're going to have Robert Varga from Walkaway Insurance. He was on a couple weeks ago. Great insurance they got, eh?
Yep.
For people who maybe all of a sudden bad stuff happens. And we're going to have Mike Wilson from AutoFest National Car Show in Oshawa. So if you are a car fanatic and live around the Oshawa area, make sure to tune in to Dave's Corner Garage. And you can find out all this and more on the Dave Corner's Garage website.
I forgot to mention
Dave's Corner Garage.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Drive safe.
Thank you, Sebastian.
This has been an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.